You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm one of the co-hosts of this podcast, and joining me for a weekly show, the first weekly show after some basketball has been played of the 2019-20 year, is Forbes' own Tony East. Tony, Pacers scored 262 points in 2 days.
Woo!
Shocked by that? Not shocked.
Over 115 offensive rating, Adam.
What? 100 what?
Over 115. Uncharted territory here for the Pacers. The Kings play fast, so they're higher scoring games by default. One game obviously went to overtime, so the total score aspect is a little misleading. That's why the offensive rating is so nice. It's good, but yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter how fast you play or how long the game is. Offensive rating is per possession. So they did very well on offense. I was impressed.
Yeah, not a lot of defense over in India.
No. Well, really good. Their defense in the second game was much better, but yeah. Neither game was, like, so good.
There was still, like, it was a good showing that first game for the first time an NBA game has played in India, so that was a good game to have.
And two
good
games they had a full-court shot, some nice alley-oops, some cool stuff. It was great.
I will say the weirdest part of those games were, did you notice there was, like, just no cheering? I mean, it's because maybe you don't have it. Nobody there has a team yet, but it was just odd. It was very, like, silent. You could hear almost, like, everything happening. Was it just – because you're not
– Your
not,
players
like,
talk.
Yeah, well, there's not a lot of neutral site NBA games most of the time anyways. Right. The only time you ever hear things are, like, if maybe you go to a game – I mean, go to a Kings game 3 years ago, you probably could hear the court because there'd be nobody there. But that would be about it.
Right. Absolutely. The first game – do you want to focus on offense first or defense?
Can we do some more ancillary or background
stuff?
Yeah,
of course.
The other thing I like to say is that I did not realize – I'm not going to say your name, but the supermodel from India that's on a bunch of TV shows – was a Pacer fan and went to
North Central.
Did not realize that.
My girlfriend was super, super psyched to hear that. She watched the video like six times. Her saying she was rooting for the Pacers.
I mean, I went to North Central. Marina, my girlfriend, went to North Central. Neither of us knew that she went to North Central for, I think, a year or two. So that was news to us, and it was kind of shocking. So, more proud North Central grads out there.
Yeah, that was awesome. They did a good job, like, promoting the game. You know, they had fun with the kids. I saw a lot of cool pictures of the team. And I think for a lot of the practices and stuff, like, kids were involved. So that was all really cool.
Yeah, and I think they avoided, like, basically, like, some stinkers of games or some, like, things that could just have kind of ruined the first kind of showcase of NBA in India. Like, the starters of both teams was that first game played a good chunk of minutes. So there was no resting guys. Both teams went deep in their bench, but it was still fun to watch. There was no, like, obviously just bad basketball. Even when the bench guys are playing, like, I'm thinking the second game, even when Jakar Sampson was probably playing 20, 25 minutes, he was still kind of awesome for those 20, 25
minutes. Jakar Sampson was good in both games.
Yeah, but he was really good that second game. I mean, he was...
Where did that come from?
He was so good that he was trash-talking the other team.
when he hit that three. Is he our starting point? Of all the great stuff that happened, I think it's hilarious that Jakar Sampson is the starting point. So,
I think this dude,
like on Thursday before any of the games, I thought he was like the 15th guy on the roster, you know? And then Leaf gets hurt, and all of a sudden he's ahead of Alize, he's the backup four, and he played really well. He said at Media Day he's been known for his defense his whole career and has spent the last however many years he's been in the G League just like offense, offense, offense. And now he's like this fast cutter who can dunk, and he hit both of his threes in the second game. I think he was 2 for 2 on threes the whole trip. And he just like fit really well and played really well. I was very impressed with him.
So are we sure he's not the stretch four this team has been waiting for?
He's not a shooter.
But he shot pretty well in the last game.
Yeah, he did. So he has been working on his three in the G League, and he got it up to 29% last year.
He's shooting 57 and 100% right now.
Yeah. He's like an okay shooter. I don't think he's actually 29%. I think he's a little better, like, realistically, because with the Windy City Bulls, he was like their number one or two option. But he's not a great shooter.
No.
Is there a guy who, like, didn't meet or exceed your expectations? You know, I feel like everybody played well in their role.
Well, it's hard when I said this on Twitter on our Locked On account, but it's hard when your team shoots 52-46 to have anybody that doesn't exceed it or at least meet them. Because that means literally the entire team shot well at every moment. I mean, the worst shooter on the team was Brogdon.
What the heck?
Who took what? Like, I mean, he took about 10 shots, and he was sort of like throwing up kind of – like at times it felt like he was just kind of messing around. Like what, he had like a couple – like around kind of around the rim shots. He was fading back a couple of shots. So, I mean, none of his shots were like, oh, he missed it because he was wide open. But then everybody else was at 46 or above. Literally everybody else was 46 or above.
Everybody shot lights out, which is crazy. I think the most interesting percentage to me and a guy I think we need to spend some time focusing on is this 52% from TJ Warren, 60% from three. TJ Warren was one of my top three guys who exceeded my personal expectations for them on this trip. So, like, Warren, given what we saw at the Suns, like, I knew he could score, dynamite score. That's pretty much it, right? Not really a shooter, not, like, really a creator. And it's not like he passed so much. He had four assists in total in the two games. But, I mean, just, like, he just popped, you know? Like, his scoring was really good from everywhere. He was hitting these crazy shots. He was, like, the leader of the offense. Let me rephrase that. The Brogdon Sabonis actions were the leaders of the offense. But, like, Warren's creation for himself in that first game was, like, the thing. And in the second game, it wasn't as good, but he was very good in that first game.
I mean, he was a breath of fresh air for this team. I mean, just having a guy of that size at that position who could pretty much, feel like, find his shot whenever he wanted to. I mean, defensively, we're going to see if he just becomes a minus because he can't guard anybody.
He was bad on D.
But, like, even when Bojan had the ball last year, and that's kind of that's the role he's filling in, It never felt as smooth. Like, TJ Warren just has this like confidence and this just ease to the way he kind of can score at times, right? It feels like it's natural. Where like Bojan, it was kind of like he had a great spot up three, and like he could like kind of use his body to create space and kind of falling off and drain a bunch of like 10 footers. But like Warren can just use his like almost his quickness and his kind of agility to find space and get like a nice 15 footer every time.
It was really fun to drink the Kool-Aid, like, after one preseason game with Warren. Just be like, yes, he's an all-star. Yes, he was not nearly as good in the second game. Now, granted, in the second game, I don't think any of the starters played as well because they just got no rhythm because the second unit, who we'll talk about, was just ridiculous in that game. But, he was super good in the first game, including, for those who haven't seen it somehow, this ridiculous on-the-move game-tying three from the corner. That was very nice. Can we move on to a guy that I want to highlight because of something I went over in my notes?
Can I ask you one more thing before we do?
Yes, you can.
From these two games, do you think Warren will now be the leading scorer before Vic comes back?
I do. Yes, okay. I do.
That's where I'm at, too. Did we do that before where I couldn't remember. Did we think Sabonis or Warren was?
I do not remember either. I see. Yeah, Adam, who was the leading scorer in the second game? Don't look.
Second game, I'm sure it was like who took a lot of shots. Okay, so Holiday played a lot, but did he score a lot? No. Was it Holiday? Wait, was it Aaron Holiday?
It was not. It was Alizé Johnson.
Okay.
So maybe Alizé is going to be the leading scorer this year. Warren's a good bet for that.
Circumstance and everything. I don't know how to put that.
Oh, absolutely. That game was so fluky and crazy. That second game was amazing. So Brogdon's the guy I want to talk about now. Absolutely hilarious that he was the worst shooter on the team. We have years of evidence that that he'll shoot better than this, so I have no worries about that. But I asked him at Media Day about playing point guard, and he said he was comfortable with it, blah, blah, blah. So I listened to that today because I was going to put an article, and his exact quote, which I have typed here that I have to scroll up to get to, is, "I'm more comfortable with that than how I previously have played." So he actually thinks he's better as like a point guard distributor guy than a play finisher. And I think on the first game, we saw that on, like, the highest level of display. 14 assists, only 2 turnovers. Darren Collison, for reference, I think only had over 14 turnovers one time in his entire – these last 2 years. His passing – Brogdon's passing was very nice.
I think another good stat is he had 9.5 assists average, and that was a third of the team's assists average for the two games. I mean, he had a third – him as an individual had a third of the team's assist over this like, two-game run. I mean, even just watching – I listened to some of the announcers. I think I listened to Quinn and Chris the first one, and then whatever NBA TV ones were on the second game. And both times it was mentioned how just he could get in the lane and he could draw defenders in and he knew where he was going with the ball and it was like smooth. And there's a little more of that third pass from the team. So the hockey assist you saw now because Warren was creating that opportunity. I mean, we saw it from Turner at one point. I think one time Warren faked one, or maybe it wasn't Warren, I'm trying to remember who, but like things we really never saw from the Pacers last year. And then the year before, even when Vic was healthy, it wasn't a lot of Hawks, a lot of Vic just making these incredible plays at the rim and kind of stuff like that. But with Brogdon, it opens up this whole new level, because if he can be the guy to break into the lane, draw a defender, and kick it out to a turn of the corner, and then kick out to any one of Warner or Oladipo, who are both the safe 38 to 40% three-point shooters, that's like another level this team didn't have before.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think another thing with Brogdon, for me, early in the first game, in the Pacers chat I'm in, I said, like, his passing was not that impressive to me. Like, it was kind of slower and safer. But as the game went on and in the second game, you know, he took a lot more riskier and, like, setting up and moving player passes that are actually, like, this pass helped the basket happen. Like, a lot of Darren Collison's assists over the last 2 years, not that Darren Collison was a bad passer, they were just, like, right to the open, like, to the open guy for a shot, like a standard pass. Brogdon, especially this one, Caitlin Cooper's got the video of it, where they're in transition in the fourth quarter of the first game, and he just fires this one-handed cross-court beauty to the corner for a three. It was awesome. And that's where I think he's going to shine a little more, is if he's allowed to, you know, be that creator. Because, I mean, with some help from Sabonis and Turner's screens, I mean, he was just, like, weaving in and out and firing up great passes. I think his passing looked really good.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Brogdon, can he put up the same assist-to-turnover ratio as Collison, but have that next level of passing? Because Collison, yeah. What makes Collison so good is he's just like, I mean, the best way, but he's the most average point guard in terms of just like, he's the perfect, like, middle-level player who is below-average defender. I guess you call him, like, an average shooter, because he's not a high-volume kind of guy, maybe above-average, but, like, he just makes the right pass, and he keeps offense flowing, and you know, you can kind of trust him. And they did a lot. He was kind of their go-to option when Vic got hurt. And
I think Brogdon made me think of Collison. Like, he just made so many of the safe play, which in terms of impact, like, is a tiny plus. And because he played so much, like, it just added up to, like, he's a plus player. Like, yeah, we know that. But now that you look back, it's like, okay, like, those very incremental safe plays can only do so much when surrounded with, like, non-Vic level talent. Like, with the right team, when he's a low-usage guy, he's great. But now in this ecosystem, when you see someone like Brogdon who can do the non-safe plays, you know, it's a little better.
Well, I think it does two things, too. Collison, first of all, would have been the perfect bench point guard. I mean, just the ideal sixth man off your bench, where he just can get set up all your bench guys in a way that not very many bench points. Now, McConnell might have that ability, so I don't – you know, McConnell's kind of one of a similar player to Collison in that way. But the other part – that Brogdon brings, and he helps, and this is what will help McMillan, is that we always thought for a while Millen was just didn't have the offensive ingenuity to, like, take this team to the next level, right? Well, maybe we're looking at the wrong one. Maybe he didn't have the talent to do that, right? He was kind of straddled with a fad young player who had his strengths on defense, but was a limited offensive player, really couldn't make the three at a consistent rate sometimes, and really couldn't score any other way. Collison, a guy who really couldn't make that extra kickout pass, and then you had limited players at each spot where they were good enough to lead this team when you were in a regular season moment to get 48 wins, because you could just kind of churn out wins after against the bad teams year after year and it would work. But to take the next level, you need a guy who could be kind of that, like, see the floor in a better way. And that might be something Brogdon brings. And maybe it brings out McMillan's best too, because McMillan was a point guard. And so I think he can kind of, like, almost trust a guy like Brogdon to execute higher level plays than other guys on the team.
McMillan talked about his connection with Brogdon on the stand at media day, which was interesting. You brought up Thad, so I think we have to go to Sabonis now, his replacement. Sabonis sure. just looks like a slightly improved version of himself from last year, and I think that exceeds my expectations for him personally, just because he's playing a different position. You know, the fact that they were able to weave him and Turner inside out so seamlessly, I was impressed by it. It's not that it was, like, anything so unique or different than last year. It just was like they were timing everything better, and Turner was spacing the corner more often, and Sabonis was finding the right guys when he would roll and things like that. Outside of turnovers, which a lot of Sabonis' turnovers were travels, so I think that's kind of a misleading number to be like, oh, he was so turnover prone. I think he played really well at the four.
Yeah, I think we kind of see how they're going to run the offense this year too with this, where they're just going to put Turner in the corner and trust that he makes those shots at a high enough rate.
He doesn't really, like, stick in the corner, though. You know, he kind of jets out there when the screening action, whatever's happening, and then he comes into to the elbow to make something happen, and then he jets. But, you know, I think the in-and-out nature of how he was moving was impressive to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think we see that it's mainly going to be coming in to maybe set a screen him like that or shifting kind of around as the ball moves, but really it's going to be sort of hanging out in the three-point area in the 15 or 18 to 20-foot area. It's a bonus. It's going to be the guy just constantly moving around trying to set screens off ball, on ball, in a more active role on offense. And he's going to be the guy trying to get the ball at the top of the key and then make a pass, something like that. So, I mean, it's the only way this works, right? If Sabonis can be the playmaker and Turner can be sort of the secondary kind of like, I mean, almost the way, like before in the shooters in the corner, right? If it was Collison and Bojan, now it's going to have to be like kind of a Warren, Lamb slash and Turner in the corners.
Yeah, and they both did well shooting the ball. Turner only took 1 3 in the first game, but hit him in the second game. He hit 2.
It's not even how many it takes, too. It's about hitting just at a rate that makes you have to guard him. You have to take
I think some of having to guard a guy is taking a lot, though.
Yeah, but if he takes, well, what's a lot? Like 3, right? 3 a game. No, you think it's more?
5 is a lot. 3 is not a lot.
So what did McDermott take last year? Like 4.5, I think, right?
Something like that.
Yeah, but if Turner takes 3 a game, makes 2 of them, that's really high. So let's say 1.
That'd be great, but I still like
1.2 of that.
Yeah.
1.3 range. I mean, I think that's still enough, because then you feel like you have to guard him. And then especially if he was doing a decent job of being kind of the hockey assist, that also.
He did. He was thrown out of the corner a lot when the defense would clamp in on him. And I think that is another part of him, like, taking it more, is they're going to close out harder and he can have that pass to Warren or whoever, Jeremy Lamb rotating over there.
Yeah. I mean, and then what he has to do is have that one game where somebody says, oh, we're not going to guard him, and he hits 4 or 5. And that just
– Right, and in the second game, they were a little more heavy with the closeouts on him, and he had he had that dribble drive, and he hit more – he just played better. He was the starter. He was the leading scorer of the starters in that second game. So.
Well, and also, if he gets the ball
– He was ready for the adjustments.
And there's no one around him if they give him the ball. He also has the ability to put it on the ground and just go to the rim. I mean, the same kind of way Jokic kind of does it, right? Jokic, they don't really respect his three, but he just – has his ability where when you give him a lot of space to make a play somehow, because you can pass the ball out of it or you can just go to the rim.
Yes. Another big one from having two centers on the floor, Adam. 47 rebounds in the first game, 51 in the second game.
How is that? How does that compare to the normal stats, I guess?
They're normally like low 40s, mid 40s.
Okay. Yeah.
And they out-rebounded the Kings. It's also based on like forcing misses and stuff, but they out-rebounded the Kings in both games, which is a big deal. Turner himself, 13 in that first game. I think that was some of that Team USA stuff showing up. Not as many in the second game, only played 18 minutes. And I think he had 2 or 3. Call me out if I'm wrong there. But they did a lot better on the glass, I think. Yeah, 3. They did a lot better in the glass. Having two big guys out there, I think that's important.
They also are a much bigger team than they were last year.
Yes, they are.
I mean,
yes,
Collison, not having Collison for Brogdon's a huge swap, but I mean, they gained 2 inches at the forward spot with Sabonis over Thad. Warren 6'9", what's Bojan, probably 6'8"?
Yeah.
So gain an inch there. Lamb is taller than Oladipo. I mean, obviously they'll be the same height. It'll be the same height next year. And then you've got 6 more inches with Brogdon over Collison. So, I mean, that's – And that, I don't know, if Collison had to wear shoes in the new league mandate, he might not be 6 feet.
I know, he would not be. So last starter, Jeremy Lamb, shot 50% both games. Pretty steady self-creator, hit 3s in the second game, did in the first game, hit 2s in the first game, did in the second game. Lamb wasn't really the fifth option, though, which I was kind of intrigued by. That kind of fell in Turner's hands. Lamb was actually like option 3, basically. But he played well, and I think he established that he's an okay. Yes, he's not as good as Warren, obviously, but he's an okay self creator, and they can be comfortable giving him the ball. And he tripped down the floor.
Yeah, I'm not surprised he's not the fifth option. I feel like Turner was bound to be the fifth option just because he's of all the 5 players on the court.
He can't create as well for himself, right?
Yeah, I mean he's the least talented offensive player of those 5. I mean,
that's true,
and that's maybe a benefit or a strength of this team that they just have so many talented offensive players. But then defensively, I mean, he's number 1, and that's also lets him rest so he can just be the stout defensive player he is and really was over these 2 games, was basically sending Marvin Bagley back every single time he came in the lane.
Yeah.
It felt like at least a down game where he had like 5 blocks on him. But yeah, Lamb, I don't know. I mean, it's hard with all these – everybody's shooting basically above 50%, and I guess Lamb only shot 33% from 3, that like it's hard not to overreact to, oh, these guys are awesome. But it again, is just another sign the Pacers just have gone a totally different way than they were before, right? They're just – just they've got guys that are their own creators in ways that just – I mean, I can't remember this team having since – I mean, I don't even know. I mean, they really didn't have it in the Paul George teams. I mean, maybe you could say
it should have been the Danny Paul team, but that never really
happened. Right. I mean, you could say Hibbert in the playoffs could create his own shot. David West create his own shot. Stevenson and George could. So there's 4 guys on the roster that could. But I mean, most of the Pacers team just over these last, 30 years since like the Reggie teams have been about defense, team mentality, and then having that one or two offensive players that can just kind of do enough to get you over the top. I mean, whether it was J.O. and Reggie back in the day, to George and Stevenson, or to George and West, probably I'd say at the peak of that team. I mean, that's – but this is just a different team than it's we've ever seen. It will make for fun basketball because, remember, they wanted to play fast a few years ago, and this is finally a team that will allow them to take a lot of shots.
Right.
Maybe play faster, I guess.
You want to head to the bench, or do you want to do a new segment for the bench?
What's your new segment idea?
We're just going to talk about the bench players.
Oh, you want to?
We're going to cut our Bulls preview because we're going to do it later in the week, and then do bench players.
Yeah, let's do that because I don't think anybody cares about the Bulls preview. That
agreed.
So let's take a quick break, and then we'll talk about the bench unit guys.
We already did Samson. I feel bad that we went out of order with these bench guys, but yeah, Samson was impressive. Who do you want to go to first with these bench guys?
Should we do Breida?
Breida was cool. Breida. I mean, he's not going to make the roster, but he was fun.
Yeah, he was exciting. Right, so they have their two-way guys already, right? So there's really no
– there's no – he can't have a spot. There's just no way.
Yeah, it's not like the old NFL trick where you're
the first – if Samson had been horrible, I mean, like, abysmal, maybe you'd consider it. But, yeah, Breida does not have a shot, unfortunately. But for those who don't know who he is, I mean, I think I talked about him once when they signed him this summer. He's been a G-leaguer his whole career, like all first-team or second-team defense in the G-league. That's all he's really ever done is just be this defensive guy. He was playing because Gogo started. He only played 3 minutes in the first game, didn't show a ton. But in the second game, he was super fun. Two blocks. He had a nice alley-oop dunk. He was in the right places. He was good. He was impressive. I knew nothing about him, and he was good. So that's all I can ask, right?
Yeah, I mean, the only way I could see him if they really think he's better than Alizé, right?
Yeah, but he's not.
No, I mean, that's the only way I could see him making the roster. I mean, that's
– right.
Because, I mean, they're both – I mean, what's Alex's guarantee this year? Like $500,000 or something like that?
No, he already passed that date. So he's
– No, but, like, I mean, that's what I mean. He's guaranteed $500,000, so, like, you could cut it and be okay.
No, he's guaranteed his full $1.5 million.
Passed
his guarantee. Oh, I see what you're saying.
I'm saying his money was so low that it didn't matter. Sorry, that's right. What I was trying to say. But I didn't realize he made
No, I think Alex is better than Breida anyway. It's not like – yeah. Like, if Goga's playing, we don't even have this conversation.
That's true. That's fair.
Which, that sucks. No Goga and TJ Leaf sucked, but whatever.
Yeah, but it's what it is.
Yeah, Breida was fun. I mean, I don't think we'll see him much more in a Pacers uniform, too, which makes it cool to just be like, yeah, awesome, like this guy.
Yeah. I mean, he's the one bench guy. I mean, usually I don't like talking about the guys that are like, 13, 14, and 15 on the roster, right. But I thought he was fun for the 10 minutes we saw him over the two games.
Yeah, me too. We got to go to Sumner.
Oh, I was going to go to McConnell first because he was – before we talk about, like, Sumner Holidays.
Okay, we can go to McConnell. McConnell, I think, has to go there in Holiday in a pair.
Okay.
Consecutively, because in the first game, Aaron was the first point guard off the bench, and Kalen is cracking me up with these tracking of this, but Aaron comes in, first possession shoots. Second game, when Aaron came in, his first possession, he took a shot, so he's just looking to get a shot when he comes in. So he was actually the first point guard off the bench in the first game and was not as good, and then he was the second point guard off the bench behind McConnell in the second game and was much better. But McConnell was just McConnell. I felt like outside of just being a nuisance, and he actually hit some mid-rangers in the second game. Outside of just being a nuisance, he didn't do a whole lot that I was like, awesome, yeah.
No, but I think he solidified that. We weren't certain how much role he'd have as, like, the backup point guard or with the bench unit. I think it's pretty clear he's going to have a decently sized role this year.
Really? I think him not being the first point guard off the bench in the first game means I still don't know. I mean, Aaron Holiday outplayed him in minutes both games.
Yeah, but I feel like he's one of the nine guys that are going to play
minutes. No, I don't. I do not get that impression. That's funny.
Right, I'm off by a player, but like, right, I mean, the ninth guy in this roster is sort of between Sumner, McConnell, and
Goga, Leave, McDermott, Sumner.
No.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's.
I think he's like 11. I think he's like not in, but what do I know?
See, I don't know if Goga's going to play minutes to start the year. I don't know
totally
where.
Totally is, 100%.
I don't know. I mean, he's a young
player. Amita Breida just played 12 minutes.
Yeah, with the preseason game. I mean, we saw it with Aaron Holiday last year. He didn't really play any minutes till like, what, game 30, 40, and then he played.
Yeah, because Vic got hurt. He wasn't in the rotation at all.
Yeah, but are we sure Gogo's going to be in the – that's what I mean. I'm not sure Gogo's going to –
yes, they need a backup center.
Well,
need a backup point guard last year. They do need a backup center this year.
Yeah, but now if they're shifting to Sabonis to play more bench center minutes, I mean, we don't know what that rotation
is. Yeah, I think they only did that because they had Jakarr Sampson in and they needed something.
Yeah, but also Sabonis Turner each played less than 25 minutes. And they're probably going to play more like 30, so that's another 12.
In the second game they did, yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying there's another 12. I don't know.
Yeah, you're also not going to see 20 minutes of Alizé and 19 minutes of Jakarr Sampson.
No, I know. So, like, I'm guessing the bench right now is on what – I mean, you guys – I'm thinking is, right, you go Holiday.
some
Lees,
there.
Lamb, kind of, right? I mean, we're not, I guess we're kind of without Vic or before. With Vic or without Vic?
With Vic, yeah, it'll be Lamb, whatever point guard gets picked, McDermott, Leaf, Ngoga, unless Leaf is terrible and then someone else, but we'll see.
But first of all, I with Lamb in, I'm definitely Collins going to get minutes start the year. I could see him playing next to Holiday. I mean, I could just see that happening.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't know. I mean, this team, I guess, from the preseason, they have a deep team, but we'll find out. Do they have too many decent players?
McConnell was, like, fine. You know, his thing is, like, being annoying and playing fast and making passes. He made his mid-range shots, which is, like, how he stays efficient. But when those aren't going in, it's not like he did anything that I was like, oh, they have to get him more minutes. Neither did Holiday that guy down to raise up the other or vice versa. I just – you know, I was not like, oh my gosh, TJ McConnell, or either for Aaron, who we're kind of talking about both at once. You know, Aaron was hitting his shots in the second game, including some threes, but in the same way, I was just never like, oh, awesome. Like, yeah, Aaron, sweet.
I guess.
But Aaron played more minutes, and I think they're going to want him to play more minutes.
I feel like McConnell's too much of like a decent player not to
fight. I have no doubt. I do not think he's a decent player.
I just mean, I hate to take his on-court thing, but just like that, you know, the fact that he's like a needs on the court just to fight his way into like 10 minutes somehow a game to start.
Maybe if like they put Brogdon on the wing for some extra minutes, they could do that. But that's
he's a very McMillan type of player.
He's very he's like if Corey Joseph was a lot worse. That's how I feel about him.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, the question, right, because really you're fighting right between Holiday, him, and Sumner.
This
right?
is hilarious to hear from you, Mr. They shouldn't have got Wes Matthews so they can play Aaron and Sumner. Like, this is kind of the same situation to me, even if I think, like, they're probably even in skill right now, but like, I think you have to play Aaron.
I guess you're higher on Goga playing more minutes than I think
he can
play. You're higher on Leaf playing more minutes. I mean, I think there's a possibility when Vic comes back, the lineup looks like McConnell, Holiday, Lamb. Name your probably Leaf as your four, and then
I don't think they'll exile Sumner. Sumner was better than both of them easily.
Well, I think that's the problem, right? Maybe I'm thinking that
there is a logjam. Yeah, there is a logjam at the guards.
I feel like Sumner is the one that ends up out versus McConnell just because McConnell has a track record.
That's oh my gosh, what track record? Of being a pesky guy, like
I mean, he's played NBA minutes. He's I don't know. He has a track record of playing NBA, of being an NBA player. And Sumner doesn't have that kind of track record. What? Sumner's played three total games.
Obviously, Sumner's only been good in preseason, basically for his career. But I think Sumner might be better than McConnell right now.
I mean, remember that you're the biggest Sumner fan on the planet. So
huge
grain of salt too. I mean, huge I don't know. I guess there is a glut, and we'll see what happens.
Look at these two games. Ed was awesome. Ed hit a step back three, and it was sick.
I guess I'm higher that McConnell's is just like he's just the consistent, where Sumner, I think, is more volatility.
McConnell did very few things that I was like, yes, good play.
I feel like he was just sort of the stability on that bench, I guess. That's just me.
That's so weird. In my chat, no one else thought McConnell played well. You're the first person. 8 assists is like cool. It's like Collison assists. Okay. Good job.
Yeah, but considering who is on this bench, you're looking at like
everybody what? Made everything.
Yeah, but I'm but I'm saying in general, take the bench, right? So you're looking at Aaron Holiday, who is the guy you've already said is the guy who just takes shots willy nilly whenever.
First person he comes in, he is shooting. Yes.
And you take a 25-foot 3-point shot. Still, I mean, I'm big on Holiday, but he's still a wild card. Then you look at Goga, we don't know yet. Leaf, iffy on. McDermott's still in consistency off that bench, so I just feel like at some point it's going to shake out where if they want some maturity, stability, whatever you want to call it off the bench, it's either going to come from McConnell or come from Sumner. I was taking that leap, so I'm betting more McConnell doing that is why. I think at some point you're going to look at Aaron Holiday and kind of – I mean, if Holiday has this great year, we'll see. I don't know. Maybe I'm lower on Holiday.
I'm not even that high on Holiday. I just think it has to be him. I think he played better slightly and he's younger. Like, I just think it –
Maybe my thing is I'm not as impressed with Aaron Holiday as it felt, you know what I mean, as other people are for this game. I just felt
like I've never been impressed with Aaron Holiday compared to other people.
Well, okay, so my thing with Aaron Holiday was I thought he would sort of like he had a really good first year and then there was kind of the step he had to take, right? They kind of become an NBA.
I don't think he had a good first year.
I mean, I think he had a first year that showed
signs. Flashes of like, yeah, there's a good player in there.
But. I mean, but that's what you want in your first year is flashes.
Right.
The second year playing good, and now after watching these two games, I worry that they were just flashes, and Holiday is going to be this 25.
Yeah, I think that too, but I think you have to try to figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, but I think at some point, maybe when you reach a point where you need the wins and you want stability, you turn to McConnell, a guy who, yes, is a basically version of Collison, but like minus 10 offensive points, or whatever, because Collison's a 120 offensive rating. So
yeah, I never see a situation where McConnell is impacting winning more than Aaron, even with how I feel about Aaron right now.
I mean, I'm not saying he's going to overtake Aaron. I think they're just going to bring him in to be the stability next to Aaron at times. But maybe that's...
I don't think playing both. They're so small. I don't think you can play both.
I don't know. I mean, I think you can try. I think that's your best.
We have to talk about other people.
We're getting bogged down in this kind of
Home McDermott and Road McDermott both hit 1 from 3 from deep. He's got to be better shooter to be on the floor more. I mean, he's fine. He's like the team does well when he's out there because he spaces the floor. You know, he's positive in both games, which most bench players were not. I know single game plus minus is junk, but whatever. And you just got to make more shots.
Did we do a Sumner? I agree. Did we do Sumner yet? I think that's the one we needed.
Yeah, Sumner was my man. He was awesome.
I think he was awesome. I agree.
He was awesome. Creating shots for himself. 4 assists in the second game, not minus passing. Maybe he's the backup point guard answer that we
were. No, I mean, discussing. He has a chance. I don't know what to take seriously yet with him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, you know, and I was wrong in my assumption that Justin Holiday would be the backup too, and we'll get to Holiday in a second, but. Yeah, I mean, I thought Sumner played, especially in the second game, he played super well. So you have to be impressed with the way he plays. You know, that long wingspan guard plays is huge, and I think he's going to get the opportunity because if he can prove that in games. And I think last year, I mean, this is just a guess, like really, but, you know, how hard is it for him to be like, okay, Ed, you're a G leaguer, go work on your offense, and then all of a sudden Vic goes down there, like, all right, you're starting. Like, there's no comfort level to that, and his offense, I mean, his defense was fine, but his offense never really came. And I wonder how much that has to do with it. Whereas this year, I think if it's clear to him what is expected from him and who he's going to play with and what his role is, I think he can be better and more comfortable and look like he did in these games.
I think that's fair. I think that's the,
that's a totally anecdotal guess. I have no, I've never talked to him about that, but
I mean, if Sumner played like he did these two games, he could easily be just – he could surpass Holiday and he could surpass McConnell.
Lock for the rotation if he plays like this.
Yeah, I mean, and it just might be real. I mean, we don't know. He's, what, 2 years removed from that injury now?
I hope it's real. I am the biggest Ed Sumner fan in the world.
Yeah, and I mean, and if that is real, then that's fine. I just don't know what to believe yet. That's my thing.
He was good last preseason too, and that never materialized. So it's under. We have to say that about every preseason thing is
– No, I know.
You know. All this stuff could just be like, yeah, they played the same team both games. You know?
I mean, some – I guess – what's the right way? Like, there's things I buy more than just because you've seen them out of players before, right? So, like,
yes.
Some of the starters things are things I'm willing to believe more because I've seen it happen in real NBA games, and so it kind of makes sense to translate into happening now, right? I mean, it's probably the high end of what will happen. This is probably, like, in terms of, like, the scenarios, it's probably the best scenario that could happen to the team if they play this way. This is what's going to happen when they're playing the best. But Sumner, I just don't know what to say yet because I mean, if he comes out in the first and is playing – what, so he's playing the 2 for a little bit or whatever off the bench for the first 15 games and plays like this and is awesome? I mean, yeah, he's going to all of a sudden, like, they're going to – should he be the 6th man pretty much? But behind Lamb when Oladipo comes back, and that's going to be a conversation to have. But, I mean, like you said, he was good in preseason, and the best game he played was against the Hawks, which is like basically playing the best team in college.
That game was weird. See, that was a game where his role was clearly defined to him, and he played well.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that – I think we talked about with other players, Turner's one, where, like, if you just have – it's about playing consistently and knowing where you're supposed to be and just being in, like a controlled, continue of the same environment over
they
and over.
They can ask Ed to, like, throw him the ball and say, get a bucket. Like, that for that second unit, it would be huge because currently it's just Aaron that I would even consider doing that for. And, you know, we already talked about his shot was good in the second game. But
it's decision-making for Aaron. It's who's better at making sure with the ball in their hands. I mean, I think they both get shots.
If they can both do it, that takes pressure off both. I think that'll help. We got 2 more guys who are worth talking about, but quick notes. Naz Mitrulong, Jakina Gant, and Brian Bowen. Mitrulong and Bowen are 2-way guys. They played at the end of the second game. That's it for the minutes. They got Bowen hit a shot, which was cool. Had to clip it because he won't play very much. Gant is a lock for the Mad Ants, but it was cool to see him get NBA minutes. Didn't do anything, no stats. Mitrulong had a rebound, that's it. But, yeah, glad to see those guys. I was happy to see them play, but they didn't do anything. All right, the last 2, Alize and Justin Holiday. Who do you want to get to first?
Let's do another Holiday and finish with Alize.
Okay. Justin, in the first game, was not very good.
No.
Missed his only shot, turned it over, only one assist. I mean, just didn't look comfortable, looked clearly behind Sumner in the rotation. He pretty much only played, I think he overlapped almost all of his minutes with McConnell in like this kind of hybrid, like second, third unit thing they were doing. In the second game, also he played none with his brother that first game. The second game, this is probably just a coincidence, but he played a lot more with his brother and he played pretty dang good. He hit all three of his threes. He hit an extra shot. He got some rebounds. He just looked like a much better player that actually makes you warrant asking the question, should he be in the regular season rotation? I think right now the answer is probably no. But, yeah, he, you know, that inconsistency I think is reflective of his career and makes it hard to project him.
Yeah, I think that's you summed him up perfectly. I mean, I don't know. I mean, seriously, I mean, like McConnell's a guy who has been in NBA rotations, but he also played for some really bad teams. We're talking like
really, Grizzlies, only good team he was on, he didn't play for. You know,
yeah.
Like he was on the team, but he never played.
Yeah, I mean, Warriors, I guess. But I'm telling you, like, he played for the Hawks, the Bulls, the Knicks, the Grizzlies, stuff like that. And so, right. How much of it is real? How much has he just got minutes because they're playing young guys hoping to lose games? Who knows? But he has experience, so that's a valuable thing that not a lot of the guys on the bench have. I mean, we talked about it before, but on the bench, there are basically four guys who have played limited minutes who are trying to break into the rotation. The question is, like McConnell, will Holiday be a guy when they need – something consistent or something they know kind of more reliable, do they fall to him at that moment, right? Like Leaf is struggling and they need a reliable guy to play kind of the four, or McDermott is hurt and they got a reliable guy to play the three. Like, did they just fall to him because he's done it before and whatever reason they do that?
Yeah, I think the way Ed played, there's no way Justin Holiday is the backup two guard.
No,
which
I don't
makes, think. Which so his role to minutes is either Sumner ends up playing the one or, yeah, like you said, he hops in at the three in Lou McDermott. Or even, I think this is not out of the realm of possibility. If Leaf is disappointing or injured, they can move McDermott up to the four and have him play the three.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking, I mean, Holiday has played some four, right, in the past? Am I?
He's tall enough to do it. I don't think he's bulky enough, but.
Yeah, but on the bench.
I think that there's enough paths for him to get minutes that he'll play in some meaningful minutes. But if everyone's healthy, I don't think he's in the rotation right now.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think he's the guy you signed in case somebody got hurt. I mean, that's what he is. He's just, you want
him. Yeah, they never really had that guy last year because when someone got hurt, they were like, okay, Edmund Sumner starting.
Well, you know? I mean, if the young guys is real, we're talking Holiday, Sumner.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess probably that's the two of them we're really talking about. If what they showed was real, and it could be, it could not be, who knows, then this team is deeper than it's been in a long time. And
yes,
that's and Holiday was just the benefit of having the cap ability to do it and just saying, why not do it?
Right.
I mean, kind of the same way with McConnell. But those kind of guys you say, well, we can do it. Why not? The question again becomes, how real was what they showed? And you really don't know until you play 20 games. And then you have an idea if it's real
or not. Yeah, having Justin Holiday and whoever between McConnell and Aaron Holiday as your injury depth guys is a pretty good situation to be in.
Yeah, we'll say this now, but you know what come like – January, two of them, Leaf will have failed completely. Something else will happen, and we'll be like, wow, we're a guy short.
And I'm sad Leaf didn't play because, you know, like you said last week, I think we're both like cautiously optimistic, which is never a good place to be with him because his first years were very disappointing.
No, you should never be cautiously optimistic about an NBA player, really. that really means you don't think they're going to be good, but you're hoping they will. Like,
yeah, that's exactly right.
Even Aaron Holiday, I'm not optimistic. I'm just sort of like concerned he could blow up. But that's
I'm full blown optimistic about Goga. I'm sad he didn't play.
Yeah, I mean Goga, I don't know. I haven't seen him play. Anybody who's 19, I don't really have any expectations for them to play because you're 19, 20 years old. You've never played an NBA game in your life. It takes whatever amount to figure out unless you're like a Zion, LeBron level talent. Then you.
So is there a better summation of preseason basketball than the Pacers' leading minute guy and leading scorer, and I believe leading rebounder in the second game being Alize Johnson?
No, and good for him for getting the minutes.
He played really well. He hit a heat check three.
Yes, for a moment I thought, is he going to hit three threes in a row? Holy crap.
Yeah, he played really well. He always, you know, he just tries really hard, so he almost looks like he's out of control all the time, and then he just, like, does good stuff. Like, oh, yeah, Alize Johnson's kind of good.
Yeah,
I feel bad that he's on this team, especially with how Jakar played, because I think if he was on like a legitimately bad team, he would actually play.
The question is, though, what he gotten to the point he is about being on this team, right?
I mean, right. Yeah, this team does. This team develops guys pretty well. We've seen that time and time again.
The question for Alize, he's probably never going to be in the Pacers rotation ever. I mean, barring something crazy. It's, did he do enough to earn himself a shot on one of those crappy teams where then he can show himself off as the eighth, ninth guy, score a bunch?
The Hornets are playing. So the Hornets and Celtics are playing right now. I'm typing up to get up their box score as I'm talking. Also, the Hornets are winning at halftime, and I dumped on their summer for forever. Like, the Hornets back up fours, they're playing like Marvin Williams, Caleb Martin, Devontae Graham. Like, you don't think they would want to throw Alize Johnson in there for a few minutes?
Well, I mean, right, his path to becoming an NBA player, unless he's like somehow can wow coaches with and workouts and whatnot like that, is to be the backup on a bad team where he gets minutes, 15, 20 minutes in the next contract. Then he scores enough points, it's enough to kind of like, oh, there's something there, and a good team snags him up to be their backup, and then goes from there to being a starter. If that's like kind of the path. I mean, it's interesting because if it does happen, the Pacers will be ridiculed for not seeing it, but I don't mean
but we did see it. It's just the situation's never there. It's just, well, it's just like if Jakar's actually good, like legit rotation caliber good, which I don't know that he is. He just played well these two games. But if he is, like, there's no way else he's going to play. Just 0% chance.
So here's the scenario. Leaf sucks. Like, just flat out sucks and loses his position in the first 15 games.
Okay.
Right? And then they're looking for a backup four. So then you just kind of try to figure out who's better, right? Maybe you move McDermott there and put Holiday at three. Then you play Sampson, kind of do the same thing. Or you decide to try Alize to see what can work. And then he shines as the guy in that minute, in that 10-game
stretch. Right.
And that's how he gets in the rotation. I mean, that's
I would never have bet in a million years we'd be talking about Jakar Sampson potentially hitting the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, and he might even – Alize might even get the chance over Jakar because
– of age.
Age. I mean, you can see that. I mean, that's the way it kind of works. I mean
– right, Sampson got his spot because Leaf was hurt. Like, let's be honest. Yeah. But,
I mean, also, let's be honest, Alize would have more of a shot this year if the Pacers didn't draft a center. I mean, if they took a
– that's also true.
I mean, that's
he did play center a little bit. I was laughing at that, you know, all summer. Like, when they signed Brema, a bunch of people made the joke, like, oh, another center. Oh, why are the Pacers signing all these centers? And in their first preseason game at one point, they're rolling out a front court of Jakar Sampson and Alize Johnson. I was like, yeah, they have too many centers, my ass. They're playing 2 6'8" guys right now.
Yeah. The thing about Alize is I hope that he can – shine somewhere to get another shot at another team. I mean, that's the best you can hope for him, I think. Yeah. I don't see him playing on this team. I think he certainly is a great story, right? He's a guy who was what they always say, 5'10" going to college, left college like 6'8", 6'9", or whatever, how tall he is. We'll find out real NBA heights soon, so we'll know what he really is eventually. So, and he went to a small college, right? Like some random Mississippi school, right?
Missouri State.
Okay. I couldn't think of what, I mean, it was an M state with a, one that's not a big program, and he's now a borderline NBA player. And so that's – it's definitely – if he can find a way into rotation, it would be a great story. But I don't know. We'll see, I guess.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I feel bad for him, but he was good. And that's – more depth. There you go.
I mean, I
like, nobody was – so nobody was bad. Nobody was just bad.
I mean, I feel a little bad, but you think about it, he's going to have made, like, what, $3 million over the past 3 years? Something like that. So, I mean, he
can't
be that bad for a guy.
Yeah.
He's going to make some money. Like, he's not going to leave this NBA thing pretty well. And probably worst-case scenario, he's going to be playing a lot of – for a really good team in Europe or China someday.
If he right.
almost feels.
Are you ready to preview Justin Holiday season?
I am. Let's do one more break, and then we'll preview what? This is the last time we're doing this together?
No. We have Victor next week, and then it's the last time.
That's right. We chose the big one together one more time. This will be our second to last one together of our season preview series. Welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. All right, so we are continuing our player season preview. So far, we've done Aaron Holiday, Tony did that together. We did Goga together, and we did who brought in together. Tony did a preview, and we did TJ Warren together. Sorry. Tony did a preview of Jeremy Lamb earlier this week. I did one of TJ Leaf. You can check those all out on our feed. It's our last, like, 6 podcasts, so you stuck with us. You can listen to those. You probably heard them already. If not, feel free to check those out. Usually at the end of each show, sometimes the second segment. Honestly, if you really don't want to find a certain one, you can DM us at Locked On Pacers, and we'll send you to the right time set and everything to find that. But today, we're going to Justin Holiday, who is the last of the new guys, right?
I think the only new guy we have is McConnell.
Yes.
You have him. I have him, excuse me, next Monday.
Man, I'm really not, what is the order?
We tried to do most of the new guys early, but we changed the order around. I think McConnell was a part of the show.
Well, I think we decided why we do McConnell, we could do all the people together. Like, that just makes
sense. Yeah, right. So, yeah, Justin Holliday, like we talked about, I think these preseason games are a nice summation of what to expect from him. A little bit of inconsistency in an ill-defined role, but a potential to be a pretty good player on his nights.
Yeah. I think he is the perfect 11th guy to, or 12th guy to have in your roster.
That is exactly right. So when I watched him play for the Bulls and Grizzlies, I think I was surprised how often they would just throw him the ball and be like, get us a basket, because I don't think he's very good at that. But I think as an ancillary, please finish what someone else started player, I think he can be a little better.
Yeah. I said this before, but I just don't know how real you accept his other roles, because he was playing for teams that were literally tanking.
Yes, that is very true.
I mean, he hasn't been on a team that hasn't been tanking since 2014-15.
Yikes.
Right? I mean, he played for Atlanta, Chicago, New York, Chicago. Oh, no, sorry. This Chicago and then my Memphis.
So he played in 81 games last year, and in 60 of them, he shot below 50%. So most of the time he's playing for these tank-tastic teams you've described, he's supposed to do more than he is capable of. And that, I think, is why his shooting percentage is not perfectly reflective of the player he is.
So
he had an 0 for 10 stinker with the Grizzlies. But I don't think he's like such a good shooter. Like the year he was with the Warriors, I mean, he didn't play a ton that year. I think he only played 59 games. But like that should be the year where he's like the ancillary guy is finishing, and he was 38.7% shooting that year. So yeah, he's pretty inconsistent in general.
If you're on a Warriors team, you can't shoot like 35% from three because they're wide open. That's it. I mean, seriously, I mean, you're playing like at one point you're on the court with a guy like Steph Curry, Klay Thompson at all times, and that just means that you.
He's actually gotten his 3-point percentage up though. Like it's his three ball's okay.
Yeah, I mean,
it's fine.
You said it's okay.
I really do wonder if there. So Caitlin tweeted this. Man, I referenced her a lot today. I really do wonder if there's something to this. Like there was a possession where Aaron Holiday came around a screen and then fired this nice cross court pass, and then Justin Holiday hit a corner three. I really wonder if there's some element of like Aaron knows where he's going to be and vice versa, where Holiday becomes this, looks a little better shooting the ball when Aaron's out there with him. I'll be interested to see that.
Yeah, that brother chemistry.
I don't know if it's real or not. It's hard to say because Justin and Drew played together for such a short amount of time in Philly.
Well, you also wonder, Drew was probably always the more talented brother of all three.
And
he sort of separated from the both of them, where they were both – they're maybe like, Drew was already off on like the AAU campuses, like this guy going to be a top 50 player someday, and Justin and Aaron were kind of fighting for their position every single time, so they're more bonding there between them. Legit question, do you think Justin Holiday would be a $4.7 million player if his brother wasn't Drew Holiday? I'm not saying
he's would be close. That's close. Like every team has an exception at the value that he got. And I think every team would be happy to have him in the role the Pacers have him, of a depth guy. So, yeah, I think so. I think next summer will be interesting to see because he'll be a free agent again in a way shallower free agency class, but teams also have less money. So it'll be interesting to see like where he ranks in the priority scale and all that stuff. Like Kyle O'Quinn last year, we probably could ask the same question, and then he went to becoming a minimum guy, but he took a much higher promise role. So I wonder if that could happen for Justin, where he ends up getting less than the money that the Pacers are offering him, but he actually gets to play next year.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Is he more a minimum guy who is more like I mean, I wouldn't say the Samson role because, I mean, I think he's
– No. Samson's career is way different.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the right example. I mean, I think Kyle Quinn's the best one the way you said it's kind of perfectly. But, I mean, that's amazing. Is he more of a minimum-level guy who is maybe playing for a borderline – maybe a significantly better playoff team who just needs a guy because they're so
low. And minimum-level is not an insult in this case because he's, like, clearly an NBA player. It's just, like – I don't know. He's not like proven enough to get paid a bunch. Find similar guys for the minimum. It's just, they're all NBA level guys.
Like, would he be the perfect minimum guy on like the Lakers or Clippers or the Warriors, right? Right. I mean, any of those teams would take him, I'm sure, just because you add depth to their team.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think my trouble with him this year is I think he's skilled enough, his D especially, to like, if he was in the rotation, like, that'd be fine. I just think Ed outplaying him, and I get the decision to play Ed over him, makes a lot of sense. So I don't know that he'll play a ton. So Adam, my question to you, over under 41 games for Justin Holliday this year.
This is weird because he played 82 the past, or 82, 72, and
80. Yeah, he's healthy. That's a good skill, is.
Yeah, he doesn't get hurt. So you said 40, what do you say, 41 and a half?
40 and a half.
40 and a half, okay. I think I have to take the under on that. I think what, Kyle Quinn played like 30-something last year?
Oh, good question. Let's check that.
I know a year before that, their kind of 11th guy was Al Jefferson. He played like 36 games, remember, right?
Oh, Quinn was 45 last year.
Okay, so that's about where, I mean.
That seems close. That is a good call. That,
so let's put it this way. Do you think the Bears are going to blow out a bunch of teams?
Right.
No, probably on that one.
So the small difference is that I think only one guy had to get hurt for Kyle Quinn to play last year, right? Like, yeah. One center gets hurt, he's in the rotation. Whereas I think, like, if one, like, if like a point guard gets hurt, I think you still won't see Holliday. Like, I think a specific, I think we talked about a bunch of, I guess there's a few guys who could get
hurt. Yeah, but the same way as Quinn, right? I mean, it had to be a center if a point guard hurt because he wasn't playing games. I mean, it's the same.
Right, but we talked about, like, say Leaf gets hurt. I think you can move up McDermott and get Holliday in there. Or if McDermott gets hurt, that one's easy. Or, you know, I think there are multiple guys. So maybe I take back what I was going
to
say there.
Yeah, I should think he has a better chance than O'Quinn would, just because, right, it had to be a center for O'Quinn to play. Like, if I'm trying to think, Coyle's got hurt, you're also not playing Kyle O'Quinn out there. Like, he's not that, you know. But, like, Holliday, you could see being anywhere from 2 to 4. So, like, if any of those – or, you know, a 2 to 4 get hurt and you shift a guy 2 to 4. So he could theoretically play. Now, they do have, like I said, they have a glut of guards. They have 3 really good guards that work. And with Big Bang, they really have 4 bench guards. So that affects it, but I don't know. I feel like it's not any – his chances are probably about the same as O'Quinn, because, I mean, we also knew last year Turner would miss 10 games, and so it's Sabonis. Just the nature of a center, they don't play 82 games. They play 70.
I had fun being Kyle O'Quinn's biggest fan last year. I hope Holliday sets me up in a similar situation.
I mean, I really think McConnell was more the 11th than Holliday, in my opinion, but, you know, we debated that earlier.
That's fair. I know you think that. I'm already afraid of my McConnell – takes for the season. I have to be reasoned.
Well, because you're worried that you're going to either have to – he's just going to play because McMillan's just going to play him because McMillan loves to play veterans and it's like a thing of his.
Yeah, I just don't think McConnell's very good.
And that's fine. You're allowed to think that. There's nothing wrong. Well, I'm allowed to argue in this podcast. Like, it's
what makes I know. Fun. Well, we've already done it. I don't want
to – Yeah, we don't need to do it again.
I have McConnell season preview, unfortunately. I have to make sure I zoom out that day. I think he's a really good dude. Like, I think he clearly has value even if he's not playing. And, like, the Pacers have already tweeted 2 funny videos of him during warm-ups. Like, he's just a very agreeable guy. Great value guy to have around. I just don't know how much he should be playing games.
Okay.
Sorry, Justin Holliday, that we are
– So, to pivot back to Holliday, if I give you the over-under of, let's say, 4 points per game, are you taking that over?
Over, for sure.
Okay, so you think when he plays –
Because okay, so here's the thing. I think when he does play, right, he'll clearly play like 20 minutes.
You think so? Okay. That's
probably like 15 to 20, and he can get 4 points in 15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess we're thinking about
– Every season he's played over 15 minutes per game in his career, he's been over 4 points. Yeah, I'll take the over.
I guess the only thing I would say if I'm going under is that once they get Vic back, they'll have a plethora of scores.
That is true. Frick, I forgot about that.
And then, true, I mean, you're assuming some of it is Warren playing with the bench at the time of Vic. Like, you know what I mean? So then it's Holliday just kind of the guy who's just there because you have to have somebody fill the minutes and plays defense, right? You said decent defense, so that's why he's out there. So, I mean, that's why 4 is probably where I would see him getting. That's why I think that's why I said that number. It's a healthy number for him.
That is fair. You have a point there. Yeah, I'm just intrigued by him. I thought he was much better than I think he actually is at first, but I think I was too critical of him at certain times either in my article about him. I don't know. He's very hard for me to get a read on. It's
all right.
Unfortunate.
So let's do this. Why don't we predict his stat line for this year?
Okay. Yeah, let's do that. We do that for a lot of guys. It's fun.
You made it go first.
This is the first. Oh, no, the Hawks, when he was on the Hawks in 2015-16, they were like a decent team. So this is the second decent team that he might actually play double-digit minutes on. So I think his role is going to be a little different, but I will go 5.5 points, 1.7 rebounds, and 1.4 assists.
Okay. I think I'll go 4 points.
Wow.
Do you hear that thunder, lightning in the background?
You guys okay? Yeah, that was very loud.
Sorry, there's a thunderstorm in Tennessee.
Locked on Thunder, OKC.
Lightning, more like Locked on Lightning.
Yeah, that was crazy.
I'm okay. I'm inside. It's all
good. Is your dog okay?
He's laying on the ground. He's fine.
Riveting stuff here. Okay, back to stats.
So, first of all, sorry to all the audio quality people. I mean, I can't help that lightning strike is about two feet away from my apartment window. Okay. So I think stat line I have for him is
that's a points. Sign that your 4 points per game prediction was crap. You're being smited down.
4 points per game, two rebounds, 1.2 assists.
I might have been too low on the rebounds. I will concede that, but we'll have to see. We will just have to see.
I mean, I think his role when he comes in will be limited, barring some like rash of injuries.
Yes.
And I think
the thing, you know what we haven't said this whole time? Like, what if Lamb gets hurt? Then Holiday's playing big minutes.
Well, also, what happens if Holiday actually just plays like 20 games, but let's say Lamb hurt those 20 games, but then he plays like 20 minutes a game, and then he's scoring, averaging 10 points per game because he's playing so many minutes. And that's also the other part.
Man, it is something there. All right. The Colts are coming up, so we should probably get you out of here because I want you to live. Adam, are you happy basketball's back? Want those fun?
I am happy it's back. The Colts are playing in 40 minutes. We will not do a football 5 minutes this week. We'll take a break because clearly it is about to like just destroy my apartment with thunder and lightning on the podcast, so we don't get more complaints about our audio quality at some point. Sorry for the background noise, guys.
Okay, I'll go here. You can follow Adam at FriedmanAdam5, although Adam's basketball tweets now come via our lovely Twitter account at LockedOnPacers.
So I'm going to try to live tweet most of the games. Obviously, I can't get to every game.
I think everybody enjoyed it during the preseason game. Let us know, please.
Yeah, I mean, most of it is responding to Tony's tweets or putting a poll on a comment here or there. But no, I mean, I'm going to do it for most of the games. I can't guarantee every game. Sometimes I watch games on delay for whatever reason. You know, I can work, like Mark, whatever. But I will try my best to do it as frequently as possible this
evening. Yeah, so do that. We will be back Wednesday to talk to Domantas Sabonis. Adam will be in either Thursday or Friday. Now the games aren't in the morning. It doesn't matter if we get the game previews out a day early to talk Bulls and McDermott. So we will see you guys later this week with more stuff. Thank you guys for listening, and we will see you on Wednesday.